We here at the Podcasting Uniquely Stylized System like to honor and commemorate podcasting networks and their shows, especially ones who weren't good enough to win an award. It helps lower podcasting depression. To do this, we offer a yearly look back at all those less fortunate shows over the past year. We do this in a commemorative yearbook. You can find all kinds of great information and quotes, as well as memorable moments. Let's look at the giant-sized team-up network. Most likely to own stocks and tiki torches? Breaking the Panel. Most likely to be caught dead with a commemorative toy in its original case up their butts? Toy Power. Most likely to be the podcast choice for pedophiles? Pokemon Go Podcast. Most likely to be what the husband is listening to as the wife is sleeping with the host in the other room? The Blazing Defender Report. Most likely to be too popular for the network? Botched Podcast. Most likely to cause the next world war? Geek Versus. Most likely to be playing at a Gambler's Anonymous? FTH Beyond. We even have awards for distinguished hosts. Most likely to be committed to a psychiatric ward for delusions of grandeur? Charles McFall. Most likely to choke to death while trying to eat 13 chicken wings simultaneously? Charles McFall. Most likely to be racist at any given moment? Charles McFall. Most likely to be struck by their spouse? Charles McFall. Most likely to have an awkward erection? Charles McFall. Most likely to be found passed out drunk in a gimp suit? Pokemon Joe. Most likely to have a squealing hog balls deep inside them? Charles McFall. Most likely to get married next? Dennis Robinson and Philip Keating. And finally, most likely to have a heart attack? Dennis Robinson. The Podcasting Uniquely Stylized System's handy outstanding universal network directory is a must-have item. Each network will have them for sale for three easy installments of $29.99 plus shipping and tax. For instance, head on over to www.giantsizeteamup.com today to get your copy. Supplies are limited.
These days, the comic book owns pop culture. You'll find it all in the panel of your favorite comic book. Us, we're living the comic's life. We're breaking the panel.
Welcome to Breaking the Panel, your weekly source of all things cool and awesome, and some stuff that's not when it comes to comic books and fandom. Over there playing with his lip like he's Marilyn Monroe. Phil Keating.
Hi.
Are you watching the foot soccer balls?
No, I'm reading the goddamn email you sent me 2 minutes before.
Why would you read that now? That's
because you can't just send that to me and me not just
the ultimate professional when it comes to podcasting, Paul Klotz.
Wow. I'm not sure if that shot's fired or not.
No, you're not reading an email I sent to you 2 minutes ago. So it's been a cool
read emails. Got him.
You know, at the end of this, we should try to get to playing, watching, reading like we used to do.
Because I have something insane to talk about.
Awesome. So we're going to try to get to that. But first, this one is for Chris Wisdom. I wish he was here to talk about it because I think he'd have some insight on it. And he'd also have his feelings hurt at the same time because DC Comics is bringing their books to Walmart. And what that means for DC Comics. It's an interesting read. They're going to be distributing Walmart, which is not necessarily a bad thing, although I think that's going to step on the dicks of many of the mom-and-pop comic book stores, right, which is where you have to go get them now. Phil, you're disagreeing. We'll get to that. Just hold it, sir. I hate Walmart. I think Walmart's a piece of shit, to be honest with you. I think Lois is the logo there. But DC Comics –
wow.
It's a thing.
Hot take.
Jesus.
It's when you build your business on the lowest common denominator and the lowest prices, you get the lowest common denominator. Now, if you shop there, it doesn't mean you're dirt. But when's the last
time you pretty much just said if you shop there, you're the lowest. I heard you.
When was the last time you went to a clean Walmart store? When was the last time people of Walmart? I rest my case. People of Walmart.com.
No. My local Walmart is in a somewhat affluent community, and it's not that bad.
Yeah, mine's pretty awesome, actually.
Yeah.
All those people at Walmarts are from Florida. So.
Well, maybe some are from Georgia, because we got the shitty Walmarts here, too. Yeah. And honestly, it's just a bad experience every time I walk in around here, but that's neither here nor there. I won't be buying DC Comics from them, that's for sure. But these will be 100-page books priced at $5 each.
Okay.
And it'll be a Walmart exclusive book. So it's not going to be like the normal titles you've already been following. They're making special titles just for Walmart. Superman, Giant, Justice League Giant. Okay, they're all going to be called Giant, but Superman Giant, Justice League Giant, Batman Giant, and Teen Titans, not called Giant, just number one, is going to be there.
Hmm.
Phil, you don't think this is necessarily a bad thing for comic companies or comic
I don't think this is going to affect the mom and pop comic shops, and I don't think that it's going to take customers out of the mom and pop customer shops. These are going on the racks that the pop vinyls and all those other niche shit, you know, at the end of checkout for the children to bring over to mom and dad.
Us Weekly and Batman Giant side by side.
Probably. So, I mean, I don't really think that this is going to keep people from going down to your local shop to get your, you know, your day, your weeklies or your monthlies.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just maybe, I don't know. I don't think it's going to affect too much.
So I'm strictly hot taking here, right? Because I didn't know anything about this before you just brought this up. 100-page, $5 book at Walmart sounds like an entry level product. It sounds like a small version of a trade paperback, right? I don't know if that's the way it's going to be. The content's going to be filled out. I don't know if they're doing unique stories for it or if they're just doing collections, basically taking a run or something and doing it that way. Like a small run or whatever, like a 3-4 issue run or something. I think it's a cool idea. I think it's a good intro product. I'll tell you. Okay. So coming from the trading card game background, Magic the Gathering and Pokemon and stuff like that, they have increased their presence in big box stores, predominantly Walmart and Target in the States. And they have focused on keeping supply on those shelves, right?
Right.
And the game local game store industry is very similar to the local comic industry. And as a matter of fact, there's a lot of crossover. A lot of stores do both, because it just allows them to expand their, their offerings and everything. There is some bitching in those circles from the fact that the products that they're trying to sell in their stores are available on Walmart shelves. But it's not the worst thing. You know what I mean? Like, it sucks because, obviously there's a finite amount of dollars out there that are going to come in. And when you look at a business like Walmart, most Walmarts are open 24/7 nowadays, right, in many communities, if not all. Very few exceptions that I'm aware of. And there are people who are going to wander through at 2:00 in the morning for whatever reason, and then they're going to buy stuff. And in this case, it's going to be just like you might buy a couple packs of Magic the Gathering, you're going to maybe pick up a couple issues of DC Comics. I don't think that's a bad thing for the brand. And I can see how the mom and pop stores are a little frustrated with that. But honestly, you have an edge on Walmart. Walmart has supply, right? But if you have any questions, you're fucked. Okay. I've tried in the last year when I've gotten into collecting Lego and stuff like that, I've tried asking Walmart associates that work in toys to either check the back for stuff or, to ask them when things get stocked normally. They don't fucking know. They have no idea.
None.
They're so disconnected from the products that they sell and everything. There's no knowledge there. There's no expertise. And so your mom and pop store still absolutely has an opportunity to build a customer base, to earn your loyalty by being experts. Even if it's just, I know when stuff is coming, not necessarily that I know what's going on in every book. So this just serves to hopefully get more people into reading books again. Reading physical books. So it has a tremendous amount of potential. It's also not like every single issue that's released by DC every month is going to end up in a Walmart.
That's true.
Just probably not going to happen,
But big names are going to Walmart exclusively. Remember we broke that. Well, we didn't break it. We read that story about Brian Michael Bendis leaving Marvel and going to DC. Mm-hmm. Brian Bendis on Batman, his book is going to be the Walmart exclusive. Brian Michael Bendis is doing that Batman.
So that if you want to read stuff, that sounds ideal.
But it also to the collector or to the mom and pop store who knows the history of Bendis, who knows the quality of Bendis, maybe they're looking forward to Bendis helping bring more people into their store. It's only going to be at Walmart. And that, it even says here in the article, is going to, and because there's not Walmarts all over the country. I mean, there's Correct. Lots of places they don't exist. They're just not there. And it's going to lead to a secondary market for collectibles. You know, and that leads into things saying you're running into, Klotz, with some of the Marvel Legend toys. You go into Walmart, you try to find it, but people have taken up in the packages or they've wrapped up the stuff already. I don't know. I mean, I want DC to stick around. And if this is putting money in their coffers to help get them stick around, I'm fine. I'm 50-50. I'm kind of more, maybe I'm 60-40. I'm 40% going, okay, this can be a good thing for DC. It can look everything you said. It maybe expands the fan base. But kind of the way they're handling it to me is like, I know it's kind of like you're going, screw you, mom and pop. You know, you've served us for the last 30, 40, 50, 60 years, whatever long it's been. But now
have they, though?
Where else have you been getting it?
Well, but I mean, like, what I'm saying, though, is like, the comics industry is struggling, right? So to say that the mom and pop industry has been serving them, I mean, they have, but like,
servicing
it's a business model that has suffered, right? So you have to do something new, especially if you want to keep selling printed comics, right?
That leads to another question that I think we've kind of talked about from time to time. Do you really want to keep selling printed comics in mass?
Well, no, but I mean, maybe getting the payroll from a big box company and a big corporation like Walmart is the last step that they're going to need to start, you know, finally putting the finishing pieces on their digital app.
Mm.
Okay.
Well, yeah, because a deal like this on the back end, so they're gonna sit here with Walmart. Walmart's going to order X number of thousands of units for every single one of these, right? That's guaranteed product, you know, guaranteed product that's going out the door for DC that is paid for, even if it's at a favorable rate.
Right, because Walmart will buy it.
Walmart's going to buy it, and Walmart will still make money off of it if they have older issues sitting around for a while and stuff like that. You know what I mean? It's not a huge deal, you know, because they can definitely put a little dump section in one of those, you know.
And they'll mark it down. Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean?
If they
right, and they'll find a way. You know what I mean? It's not a huge deal. That's great for a company like this because the mom and pops can't be relied on to order X number of books anymore because they don't sell them. You know what I mean? So,
well, and we've talked, and you're right. It's time for a change. And maybe this is not the change we want, but it's a change we deserve. But it's thank you, Phil, for at least giving me a ugly look on that one. But because we talked about, well, if issue number one's coming out and you didn't go and order it and get them to pre-order by that Wednesday or by the Friday or whatever, I mean, it's a very short window to order the next number two or the number three, you won't get it. And so if you didn't get right in ahead of time and get, I mean, it's such a
welcome to honestly, the world
pushing
of
the rock up the hill business model.
I know, but that's the world of collecting. You know, if you miss your chance, you miss your chance, and then you have to go either on Amazon or eBay or somewhere else.
You gotta come pay a motherfucker like me.
Yeah. Yeah.
So then that I guess for me Chris is rolling over in his
Yeah, exactly. Right, that's why I'm laughing like that. That's specifically for Chris.
I'm actually more annoyed at the price.
$5
for 100. You said 100 pages.
100 pages. Yeah. $5.
This is $5, and this is what 28 pages.
Yeah. What I was gonna say is that price is phenomenal. That's a great fucking price.
So
that begs the question for me, who always, obviously, probably incorrectly presumed that you create something as art because you want people to consume it, but it seems like we're creating shit hoping it'll become collectible and disappear in this industry. And it's like,
well, I don't think that's what this is.
Stories? Are you writing shit that'll disappear?
Oh, I don't think that this is that at all. I don't think they're not looking to be scarce here. You don't make a deal with a company like Walmart if you're looking to have a short run. You know what I mean? Yeah. These are going to be mass produced. These are going to be worth nothing. Okay, let's get that out there right now. If you're listening to this thinking that you've got the next speculation on how you're going to get rich someday, this is, first of all, this whole thing is probably going to fail. They're probably going to do like a year's worth of these, and they're probably not going to sell. They're not going to be worth shit, okay? They're going to make so fucking many of them. You're going to be looking wherever they're located in your local Walmart. There's going to be 15 issues of each, you know, each month's issue just sitting there for months, okay? I'm just saying that right now. Because I do think that this is a cool idea, but I do think it's probably ultimately not going to work out. But they're not looking to be scarce. You don't make a deal with a big company like Walmart if you're looking to be scarce. You're looking to throw a ton of product out there. But that's what the industry needs. That's what these comic publishers need. They need somebody who's funneling them a steady supply of cash that they can build things around. Like Phil was just saying. All right, so you count on X number of units at X price. We know every single month we're getting X amount of money from Walmart, right? Or let me rephrase that. X, you know, Y and Z. So we're getting Z amount of money, right?
Yeah. Purchase orders. That's
kind of thing. So, you know, some percentage of Z is going to be applied to paying to produce that book, you know, paying your artists, paying your, you know what I mean? But there's going to be profit built into that. And that profit is going to be able to be used to fund other things. If this works, if people buy these books, or if Walmart's just happy having them, even if they don't necessarily sell like hotcakes, which Walmart often puts up with. I mean, you've gone through a Walmart before. They sit on certain stuff forever sometimes. You know what I mean? It happens.
Yeah, their clearance is 5 cents off. Yeah. Well, that's not a goddamn clearance.
Well, I'm not going to knock their clearance, so I've gotten some incredible stuff on clearance.
Yeah, you can get some good stuff, but it's not what it used to be.
But yeah, no. So I mean, this is going to put a entry level product in the hands of a general public, which will hopefully spark them to be interested in buying more books. They're not going to be able to get them from Walmart. They're going to have to go to their local mom and pop, and they're, you know, this is going to provide steady income for DC. That's going to hopefully allow them to keep funding other stuff. If it works out according to plan, this is a win-win across the board. You know what I mean?
It
actually can help those mom pops. Sorry, go ahead, Phil.
I was about to steal exactly what you were about to say, because they could be a springboard for those mom and pops, because if little Timmy, you know, loves his books and he's getting through it in a week, yep, and he wants more books, where's he going to go? He can't go back to Walmart because he's already read that one. Mm-hmm. All right, well, let's take him down to Four Corners Comics in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. I mean, it's the only place to go. Yeah.
Go to your local public library, bitches. There's lots of great stuff there.
Or support your local goddamn comic book shops, like you were bitching at me before we started.
I ain't paying $8 for 28 pages. I'm just saying.
Well, I mean, that's an issue, though, right? Like, I have my pull list for Oblivion Song, right? I have a huge beef with that book right now, because it's slow as fuck, right? I'm paying it's $4 or $5 an issue. I'm only getting like 10 seconds a story, right? And it's like, and it's, so now
you're saying it's like a Netflix series episode 8.
It's the worst.
It's like half an episode 8.
Oh yeah. God damn.
And it's there's a production delay now, right? Too. They're not coming out every month, if I recall correctly.
The next one's due out July 11th, I thought.
Yeah.
Unless news broke that I didn't catch.
I thought there was a delay coming, but I could be mistaken. I might have read it about something else. But anyways, the point I'm trying to make, though, is like buying month to month, if you're not reading multiple titles, is rough, because you get a really slow trickle. Getting 100 pages for $5 is amazing. Like, that's a lot of story. You can do a full, you know, fully fledged arc in 100 pages, and it can be good. You know what I mean? So I'm hoping it's something like that. You know what I mean?
It's the Oblivion Song Collector's Edition box for $200 that's being delayed.
Oh, okay.
Mm. There's a problem with it.
Yes. Well. Yeah. Anyways, but yeah, no, the week to week or month to month thing is, and it's expensive. You know what I mean? That's the other issue. So maybe this will signal a shift towards, I wouldn't mind paying DC's prices if their books were longer. You know what I mean?
Oh, I agree.
Now, I am stuck in nostalgia where I paid where I thought it was a lot to pay $3 for a book. And yes, it's 1990, so that's...
Yeah, gas was, Walmart. You know, a nickel, and you can get a hamburger and a coffee for 25 cents.
Ooh, I remember gas is 69 cents, man. That's the best tank I ever had.
Well, you know, it's kind of like the Netflix dilemma too, right? Mm-hmm. So one of the issues with Netflix is... there's so much content out there now. Let's just look at Netflix specifically. There's so much content on Netflix alone that people are paralyzed by that. And so they tend to watch what's hyped up at the moment, and then they don't watch all that other stuff that they're paying for. You know what I mean? Like that they could be watching for whatever reason. And it's the same thing with comic books. People aren't buying month to month as much as they used to because there's so much content out there. Not only are there so many books coming out every month, but there's also 70 years of stories out there. And every year that goes by, we're just adding on to that huge mountain of content. And you can find some of that older stuff cheap, whether you're downloading it through a service or you're, you know, doing something like Marvel Unlimited, or you're just pirating it, or you're buying, you know, old issues at your local comic shop, excuse me, you know, stuff like that. So it's like, you're going to reach that paralyzation point of like, well, there's just so much, you know what I mean? But this seems different. This seems very digestible, which is good.
Yeah.
It's like a sick-ass dollar menu.
It's accessible. And that's, I guess that's the important thing. Besides for my unnatural hatred of Walmart, but that's...
You know, it also will get a bunch of younger kids into reading comics.
Hopefully. You know, I would have lost my shit when I was a kid if I could go to my local grocery store and get, because that's what a lot of people use Walmart as, right? Grocery store, pay $5 and get 100 pages of a Batman story. That would have been, because, you know, I grew up in the 90s. I grew up, you know, the $2-3 issues, you know what I mean? They weren't super expensive, but they definitely weren't 100 pages, you know what I mean? And I had to go to drugstores to find that because I had to find somebody who had some semblance of a newsstand. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah. I had to go to a comic book store when I was a teenager. But luckily, that was kind of the boom of comic books for a while there in the mid-90s. And so my small little town of Tifton, Georgia, had a comic book shop that you get football cards and comic books. And that was always fun to do.
It was all Captain America, no Power Man.
You might be right. I don't know. I just went for the X-Men, so I don't know. So I saw a meme. I saw a meme this week, I think, or maybe last week, where the headline read, GameStop is looking for investors. They're struggling, you know, right now. And the meme was, I'll give you $350. Yeah, they don't give shit for your trade-ins, especially in
right.
But here's an actual from the Motley Fool, economic article about GameStop is diversifying away from games with comic books, because you couldn't have guessed that, you know, with that held up there.
This is going to be horrible.
But I know, right? GameStop recently announced that it starts selling books in about 40 of its namesake and Think Geek stores in a test program. I didn't realize they were tied in with Think Geek.
Who owns who there? GameStop, the company that owns GameStop also owns ThinkGeek.
Like siblings. There's a parent company.
So
I was worried about ThinkGeek crashing if GameStop crashes.
But. So if you'll notice, like if you happen to have a local mall that has both a GameStop and a ThinkGeek, ThinkGeek is pretty much 80% of the stuff that was in the other half of the store for a GameStop and some extra collectibles and stuff. Where GameStop lately has been like, it's mostly used games, a little bit of the new releases, and then it's a bunch of collectible stuff. They've been diversified for a while.
The picture they use in the article is a lie. I have never been in such well-organized GameStop. My GameStops are always like, here's a whole bunch of collectibles and about, put your hands just an inch apart from each other. This much space to walk through the aisles and wait in line because, you know, the line can hold one person at a time. I like the prices on used games and the deals they do there, but their collectibles are overpriced, and there's a lot of them. Now, some of them are very beautiful. I mean, some of them are, in my opinion, collectible.
They have so much garbage, though.
Yeah.
Let's be real.
A lot of it.
Yeah, about 100% is garbage.
Well, no, there's some cool stuff, but like...
Welcome to the Geek Versus, where we don't like anything.
Oh, Jesus.
I love you, Tony.
No, I mean, so GameStop's been diversifying for a while into collectibles, and some of that collectible stuff is fine, but there's so much of it is like the blind buy stuff, which is all right, I guess.
I personally hate blind buys.
Well, it's cheap for them to carry and put on their shelves.
But then they always, like, you always see the clearance section is just full of that garbage, which is their clearance section, which is labeled at full price with a yellow tag and not discounted at all, which doesn't make any sense to me. But the other thing is that they, you were saying it's overpriced. Like Marvel Legends, they carry Marvel Legends at ThinkGeek and at GameStop. It's at least up here in the Northeast, it's $22.50 or $22.99. It's like $2 or $3 extra above normal MSRP to buy something from them, from Marvel Legends. And I'm just like, it's already $20 a figure, man. Like, come on.
But
like,
I mean, that's most of their inventory is always about $2 to $5 more expensive than
their. And I don't understand how they expect to be competitive that way because
they make full profit on used games. I mean, if once the game leaves the store and you open it and bring it right back, it's $25. So they cut you in half right off the get-go, and then they sell it for $55.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's just total margin profit. But I have a personal beef with GameStop. So I'm not a fan of their practice. I haven't gone in since the Switch came out. I will say that my local GameStop traditionally gets in the things that I want them to. So I was able to get an NES Classic and my Switch and my Super Nintendo Classic through them. But that the shop in Shippensburg is the only one that I've been in where the employees are actually helpful and nice. And it is normally clean like this, Charles. We have a very clean GameStop.
Well, not clean. They're just
cluttered.
Cluttered.
Clean walkthrough. I don't like their practices, and I never have.
I agree.
No. My son learned a hard lesson this year at Christmas. He bought Battlefield 1. He wanted the other game that was a big war game out at that time. And he didn't research. He didn't check it. He just took his Christmas money, went to Walmart and bought it, brought it home, put it in, goes, wait, what is this? Because he watched a bunch of YouTube channels like, this is the game you bought. It's the game you said you wanted. And it turned out, whatever the other one was, I forget now, he wanted that one. So, like, all right, man, we're going to try selling eBay. So, no, let's take it over to GameStop. Like, okay, brand fucking new. And actually, it might not even been – oh, no, it was open because we couldn't take it back. But brand new, they were going to give him $7.
Of course.
And they were selling the used one for $35 or $40.
Yeah.
And, like – I didn't cuss at him because you can get arrested for cussing in public if you start a shit. But I almost went, fuck you, GameStop. I told him, like, yeah, see, I told you. They don't give a crap. They're not going to give you anything. You guys are like, well, no, it is like that, asshole. Brand new. Look at it. He put it in the wrong game.
Yeah, but that to play devil's advocate, like most products, it's not great for the consumer. So I'm not, like, praising them. Like, I'm not hopping on their dick about this. But the thing is, that is what you expect to pay. Like, if you deal with a pawn shop or something, they're going to pay you roughly 33% of what they're going to look to sell something, give or take. They're never going to pay you more than half. You know what I mean? That is absolutely not. So the only way you're going to get close to half is if you're giving them something that's super hard for them to get. You know what I mean? That's something that's going to, they're definitely going to sell. They're definitely going to make their money on. You know, it's that whole Pawn Stars joke. You know what I mean? I'll give you $5 on this thing that's worth $5,000.
Yeah. But
it's because they have to do all the legwork. Now, in this case, the legwork is they're going to catalog it, they're going to put it on the shelf, and they're going to hope somebody else wants to buy it. But what people don't realize is GameStop buys pretty much everything. They don't pay much for it, but they buy pretty much everything that you bring into them, and most of it doesn't sell anymore, which is why they've diversified so much. You know what I mean?
Yeah, there were some breaks in their model, and I've always had this issue. I've had this issue with any industry, and it's a personal issue. I want to be clear. This is non-political. I don't think the government should regulate shit. I'm just saying, on a personal level, if I know I can I have a, this game's going for $60 brand new, and it's the hot game. It's Christmas time. It's right now. And I know that I'm going to sell it for $40. I can offer you $20, and I can make a really good profit on that. But when you offer $8 and you're maximizing, that's you're not managing your business correctly, in my opinion. I had this conversation when the gas prices hit $4 a gallon back in Bush Jr.'s presidency, and it was just gouging. It was gouging across the board because there's rumors at that time we're going to invade Iraq. And we had to start, it's like, no. Exxon literally just posted their third quarter earnings at $12 billion with a B and profit. And with a P, profit, not cost, not everything. That's not their total. No, that was their profit. When you're making that much in profit, you're gouging people. That's just kind of sick. And that's where I have an issue with GameStop. I used to love them. I used to be a member. I used to pay to get that pro stuff. And if you go all the time and you work the sales, they're still stacked to their Vegas. It's still stacked to their favor, but you get much better deal out of it. But if we got to where we weren't going all the time. If you're the casual person, you're just going to be dumping things. You might as well just go to eBay and sell your stuff at this point.
Oh, absolutely.
But not even the point. We're supposed to be talking about they're trying to.
Well, I was about to get back to that. Why do they think entering the comic industry now is the answer to their problems? When book sales have been on a big decline for a very long time.
I mean, it says here.
I literally can't explain it.
Yeah, it says here that they dropped the comics direct market tumbled 10% in 2017, according to Diamond Distribution. So that's a huge drop.
You guys are mad at GameStop. I've got hashtag fuck Diamond to respond.
Yeah. Well, that's fair.
Don't get me started on that shit.
No, but it's who's quoted here.
Because the entire industry is distributed by a single company.
I mean, I honestly, if you're going to diversify, you open up a gaming section where you can host, I don't know. Fortnite tournaments where you come to pay to play on their stuff in their store.
Oh, that's just going to make sure that they don't sell anything, though.
You know?
Yeah.
I don't know. There's other ways to diversify.
Well, let me, because, you know, you brought that up. I was in Destiny USA, which is this, you know, huge mall in Syracuse, New York, last weekend. And it was Friday night. We went to go see Jurassic World and RPX there. And we walked by the Microsoft store, and they were doing Fortnite Fridays, right? They were filled with kids. And I saw every single one of their employees just shooting the shit with somebody else. They're not selling anything.
Right.
They've got a shitload of people in their store, but they're not selling a damn thing. So doing something like that is not going to like generate sales. And Fortnite's a free-to-play game, so it's not like they're going to sell copies of it, you know, hosting, you know what I mean? I don't see how carrying comics is going to help. They're just probably not going to sell them. You know what I mean? Because they're going to try to charge more too. I guarantee it. You know what I mean? They're going to have like an extra buck tacked onto each one.
Oh, I did not even realize they had their own game publishing division for a while.
Yeah.
Which has put out 4 games apparently.
Yeah, they put out a couple of things here or there.
Let's get to the meat of this real quick. There are ThinkGeek stores.
Yeah, there's one in North Georgia somewhere.
What?
Yeah, there's one. Yeah, there's one here in Syracuse as well.
I had no idea. I guess that's, you know, standard for malls that have more than 3 stores open in it.
is that what you go to? You have the car wash, the thrift store, and
the Bath and Body Works. Because
those are narrow.
Honestly, real talk, the ThinkGeek store is basically a nerdy gaming culture version of like a Hot Topic now. So
okay, yeah, that makes sense.
They have some apparel in the back. They have a lot of collectibles. They don't carry any games in ThinkGeek really. Honestly though, I do want to praise ThinkGeek. GameStop fucking sucks. Like, let's be real. I only buy things from them once in a while. But ThinkGeek's pretty cool. They've gone deep on Gunpla. which is nice. That's Gundam models for you plebs who don't speak weeb. They had, you know, because I was just in there.
I don't feel shamed by that at all.
No. No, but they carry the you know, the Gundam models, for example, which a lot of people can't find any place else unless you have a Barnes & Noble. It's either Barnes & Noble, ThinkGeek, or order that shit online, because it's very hard to find it a lot of times. They had a ton of collectibles of pretty much every, you know, everything. There's a lot of gaming, but there's a lot of just general pop culture stuff. It's a nice store. It's just some of the pricing is too high. Some of it's really fair, though, too. Like, they've got nice statuettes and stuff like that. Like, it's a cool collectible store. So I will praise that. That branch of the company has diversified pretty well, and they offer a lot of stuff, and it's like a lot of stuff that nerds would just be like, hey, yeah, I definitely want that stuff.
Oh, most definitely. I mean, they are about to release and taking pre-orders for the Build Your Own Pip-Boy. You know, where it's a Pip-Boy from Fallout where it's just the pieces. Mm-hmm. And you have to put it together and all that.
Is that what Build Your Own means? I'm sorry. I got lost there for a minute, Phil.
What?
Is that what build your own means? Is it? It's just pieces. I got lost. I didn't realize they.
Why don't you help your kid? Why don't you go back to helping your kid? So, but they always have exclusive that I would love to drop $150 on. I just can't at the time.
Yeah, there's been lots of stuff that has been on my wish list, but it's so expensive. Mm-hmm. You know, because it is collectible. I mean, when it first came out, I don't know how many they made. I wanted to get it because it looked cool. But it's a lamp that you suspend from the ceiling, and it's a question block from Mario, and you punch it to turn it on.
That's awesome.
I've seen it. Yeah.
That's cool. It was $100.
Yeah.
I can't do $100.
Oh, yeah. That's so yeah. The most egregious version of that is my local ThinkGeek has this giant War Machine statue, right? It's not super fancy. Like, it's just a big, giant plastic statue. It does have LEDs in it, so it's lit up. But it's not, like, there's no animatronics or anything. It doesn't move. It's not posable. It's literally just a giant hunk of plastic with some, you know, colored lights in it.
Yeah.
$12,000.
What?
Yeah. $12,000.
Not yen. Dollars.
No, dollars.
Good God.
I was like, I don't even understand. Like, why would anybody buy it? I was like, I could see that being a couple grand, but like $12,000? Holy shit.
Yeah. It
was terrible.
Oh.
My sister was balking at a God of War statue for $350. She's like, that's cool looking, but what the fuck, $350? I was like, yeah, if you're really into God of War.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely been some busts, and it depends on the quality and I guess who made it and how it was made, but there's definitely been some actual busts where it was sculpted, and I'm sure it was sculpted by a computer. Not
Please
by
tell me more about sculpted busts, Charles.
Educate yourselves, you please. Shut up, Phil. You know what? Moving on. Screw you guys. I think this is you.
Well, can we capstone that though, and just we all agree that this is a really dumb idea, right?
Yeah,
Awful.
It's funny that I would praise, and Phil, yeah, you kind of praised as well. Praise Walmart for carrying comics, but GameStop were like, are you fucking retarded? Like,
GameStop, sorry. Already struggling. I mean, they are. Right. They're struggling. They need investors. They need to fuck some money.
And most GameStops are like right next to Walmarts anyway, so they'll all just get their comics from Walmart.
That's actually true. But what is this about?
Jared Leto, as we talked about a couple weeks ago, is coming back for a possible Joker one-off movie. But also, it hit today that he might be playing Morbius, the living vampire, in an upcoming film.
I'm sorry.
I find it an interesting character to, you know, to pull out and kind of build a franchise around.
I thought Morbius was really dumb.
Yeah, that's character. But I mean, Jared Leto would make a pretty fucking awesome Morbius. I mean, if he's anything as creepy as he was in Blade Runner, I mean, he's going to be goddamn perfect. I just, there's not much about it yet. And I looked into the gentleman who's directing it. I didn't recognize any of the films that he's directed, but it's just, I found it as a weird character to pull out of the Spider-Man-esque universe to do a one-shot off. I find it even weirder that they're announcing this before they even test run Venom to see how that does, or the crowd reaction to how Venom is.
They are seeking to hold rights, I guarantee it.
That's true. Yeah. You know what? I didn't even think about that.
Well, I was going to say, too, because marketing can be this dumb. I saw a headline, I didn't pull it for the show, but I saw a headline that says Venom trailer has gotten way more views than any other Spider-Man trailer ever.
That trailer will get more views than the Venom movie itself.
That is quite possible.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
So, and yeah, viewbotting your own trailer doesn't count, guys. Come on.
But are they gonna introduce Morbius in a different movie first and then give him character, I did not know who the hell it was, and they showed up into Marvel Avengers Alliance, and even then I was like, who the fuck is that?
Morbius is a fine character, but like, and Jared Leto is a great actor. Like, let me just say that. I really do believe that he'll throw himself at the, like, I really like, a lot of people like to shit on him for the Joker thing, but that's not him. He played what he was told to play. You know what I mean? And he did a good job meeting the criteria that Suicide Squad asked for. And we'll see if that pays dividends going further with that role. He's not a bad actor. He's a little bit insufferable at times, but you know, there's lots of people who are twats, so it's whatever. The character is fine. It just isn't a super mass market character. Like, there's not a lot of broad appeal. So this is going to be really awkward, and it's probably going to do pretty bad.
Maybe they're spinning it towards the horror, we don't know what's going on genre. As in, like, a bunch of people who like horror films and like vampires go, oh, I'm going to see it because of that, and don't realize it's a comic book film.
Maybe.
It also could just never come out.
This is also true.
You know, just get pushed and pushed and pushed, like Gambit or other, you know, properties that have come and gone.
It is also early days on this.
It's super early.
Just announced, yeah.
And the only reason I know who Morbius is from the 90s Spider-Man cartoon. He was in that for like a hot second. But I thought the casting is going to be pretty dead on if this actually comes to light. But that's really about it for now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, fair enough. Speaking of Blade Runner, right before I came downstairs, my son, Ryland, my youngest son, who's
was
sick,
running with blades all over the house.
He goes, hey, Daddy, you want to sit down and watch Blade Runner with me? I went, no, I'm going to do a show, and you can't watch the movie. What? No. No. And my wife said, oh, sorry, I didn't know. How's that different than anything else we watched? He was like, one, he hasn't seen the first fucking movie, asshole. But second, I said, no, it's really slow. There's lots of adult concepts. There's things you can see, like some violence. And I mean, like superhero violence. You know, some violence that you, oh, that's TV shit. You can see some nudity. Okay, whatever. But then there's concepts, such as the ones in Blade Runner, that when they fuck with your mind, they change your perception of reality. He's six. I don't need that shit right now.
So you put on Blade Runner 1 and then came down here to do the show. So by the time that we're done, he's caught up and ready to go to 2049.
Yeah, it's like, do your homework, bitch. That's how this house rolls. Actually, when he does ultimately watch it, he is going to watch it in order. It's just going to be when he's older and can understand the concept.
Handle his acid. Got it.
Yeah. This one I thought was interesting. This is from Kevin Feigen is the new head of Marvel. Kevin Feige is looking to bring the Eternals into the MCU. And that is indeed going to be a game changer. If that, I don't know where I like where this is. I mean, I like the idea of the Eternals, right? But the line here, they said that the, let's see if he says it. No, he doesn't say it. It looks like it's just the author thrown in. It's like, it basically could retcon the entire 10 years of the history of MCU. Basically, you bring in the Eternals because they can do stuff like that. So, what do you guys say? I've heard you talk about Eternals a few times, I think, Philip, in the past, right? No?
I think it was Casey.
Maybe. I know the Eternals are basically the gods of the MCU or of the Marvel Universe. Jack Kirby envisioned them in the Greek mythology. I know that Nowhere is, of course, in Guardians of the Galaxy, if you're not familiar, where they're in the comics, they're based out of Nowhere. In the first and second film, they go to Nowhere. It's the hollowed out head of an Eternal. You know, that is what Nowhere is. They're inside the head of an Eternal. That's a dead one, apparently. And so they can die. But yeah, they're looking to possibly bring Kevin Feige himself is looking to bring these into MCU. And I don't know, man. And of course, he's wondering.
I feel like they're a little obscure, but we'll see how it plays out.
Do you think they're going to change the history of the MCU?
No.
No. No, I don't.
That would be really dumb.
But they, you know, they keep turning into this cosmic universe very hard. So
yeah, they. I feel like most of the MCU up to date has been setting up the future of the cosmic side of the MCU. Yeah. So
yeah,
we could see some cosmic stories. And I'm down with that. Like, I'm down with some cosmic scale stories. It's going to be interesting if they suddenly start doing what Green Lantern should have been able to do before Green Lantern Corps can even get off the ground and start doing it, which yeah. will, I honestly, like, if they start rolling out, you know, the cosmic level stories and they start, and they're doing well, just like the other stories are, that's going to put a major wall in front of DC because they've got a lot bet on Green Lantern Corps being able to break them out in a direction that's a little bit different. And this could be a giant fucking brick wall that says, no, we got that too.
I would like to see it just for the fact of a bigger universe to play in than just the Avengers. I love the Avengers.
The universe is pretty fucking big right now.
Well, now, once you hit Infinity War, it definitely...
Yeah.
We had Guardians that was just out there, and it was, hey, we're looking for Iron Man to cross over. We're looking for this character, Thor, to show up, or blah, blah, blah. And it's kind of a tight on Earth, not just on Earth, really New York City. Storytelling, for the most part, it feels like, and I want to see more Adam Warlock, of course. I believe that's coming in part two. It's coming soon, TM. But yeah, I'd just like to see other stuff. Then I'd like to see other verse stories, you know, Elseworld and shit like that.
I mean, they have a pretty fucking clear concept of what they're doing with the cosmic universe, and I am excited. Yeah. And they haven't disappointed me yet. I mean, anything from the Guardians to Doctor Strange, you know, it's fit really well and it feels good. So, you know, slip in some more, you know, Space Jam into me, please.
Yeah.
You heard it here first, folks. Phil says it feels good.
It feels so good.
Slip it right just in.
Slip it in.
Slip it in. Girl. And
you ruined Space Jam for many an adult.
Come on and slam.
Along those lines, did you see Tom Holland accidentally release the title of the next Spider-Man movie?
Tom Holland needs to be put in a vault. They just need to put Tom Holland in the Scrooge McDuck vault until he is done acting.
That was not an accident.
No, of course not.
No, of course not. I mean, it's part of the meme, but I mean, come on, man.
I thought it was great. Got people talking about it. Far From Home is going to be the title of the next Spider-Man film. And do we think that plays into Infinity War with that kind of title?
Well, I mean, it's all your perception of what Far From Home is, you know? Yeah. He could be in Philadelphia, which is a 4-hour drive to New York City. That's a pretty far, you know, he's a high school kid, man. That's a pretty far distance. That's far.
Yeah, that's probably the farthest he's ever been away from home.
Yeah. Like, I would love to see Spider-Man come to Philadelphia I think that would be a funny concept. I'm going to start writing that fanfic now. Hey, you spider fuck. You can't be up there. It'd be great.
And this one for the Mark Millar fans and Netflix fans. I don't know much about Millar's work other than what we've talked about on the show, but possibly two of his – stop refreshing. God damn it. Two of his titles could be coming to Netflix. They'd be dope. Star Court and Star Beam, two new comic book series.
Double dope.
Yeah, you like, you know those or?
No, I just okay. I know that he does good work, and anything like this that can come to Netflix is amazing.
So he does have a project right now in the works called The Magic Order, which has brought out his Millar World company. And then they're looking at Star Crusher, possibly. Essentially, it sounds like they've just been talking about those kind of things right now. But so he's it's Millar that is the shit comic book artist, and Millar is the good one.
What?
There's two that sound very similar. One of them did the one of them did the Batman taking on Muslims in the desert book.
Oh, he's not a shit artist though. Frank Miller's
Millar, yeah. No,
shit artist. He's a shitty person these
that's
days.
That's it. Yeah. That's what I'm trying to get.
But he's been responsible for some great stories and some great art. Yeah, I mean, he's just washed up.
Gotcha.
And an asshole.
So quite possibly Netflix.
I'd say that to his face, by the way.
Yeah, he's the GameStop of comic book writers.
I wouldn't say that because I don't think you'd understand the reference, but
that's fine. I mean, any new / good sci-fi is good in my book.
That's how I feel.
Yep.
And I think Netflix has done such a bang up job recently with supporting good sci-fi. I am still blown away by Altered Carbon. Like,
yeah. Oh my god.
Oh man, I hope they do more. I hope it got enough viewership. They're still plugging it, I noticed. It's still pretty high in the initial home screen.
We all should go watch it again. Just
to
give it more.
Just to send the message that I might go through it again, to be honest. It was that good. I really enjoyed it.
It was. It was so good. And I know Phil has never seen it. You can just hold your breath now. It's
fine. Well, because Phil doesn't watch anything.
I spend more time in the Netflix menus than I do watching programs.
But to steal from our old friends, DC on screen, just go put it on in the background, let it run.
You know, I don't think you can do that with a show like that.
If you're, if you're watching it the first time, but if it's Klotz and I, we can do that because it's just sending numbers to Netflix saying we love it. This is us putting in an effort to say we love it.
Okay, Phil, real talk. I think you should make time to watch it.
So the great British baking show just started last week.
Yeah, no, fuck that.
And I watched it was 2 hours premiere. Like, that's 2 hours of my time. And it's a new series and a new season. So it's like,
so good. I mean,
they did bread last week, Paul, bread on week two.
They're outside. That affects how the bread
rises. Get your head out of your ass, Paul. Man.
And Mary. Oh,
Jesus Christ. I told my wife, like, I hope Mary Berry goes to Dragon Con because I am leaving you in a heartbeat. my sweet Mary. Anyway, let's get back to whatever the fuck we're talking about.
It's about time for that break.
It is about time for that break. So go get your cigarettes and your potty breaks on. And we'll be back after this.
Hey guys, Phil here to talk to you about patreon.com/breakingthepanel. If you want to support the show, that's the best way to do it. We have three different levels over there, $1, $5, and $10. $1 is just you slipping the tip right into it. $5 gets you into the Discord so you can join the conversation and make fun of Charles right to his face. And at $10, you get exclusive content via panels, video, whatever we want to give you at $10. And the only place to get that's over at patreon.com/breakingthepanel. All right, guys and gals, let's get back to breaking the panel.
Welcome back from the break. Hope you had a good time away from us. We missed you. We're glad you're back. There's some cool stuff to burn your money on Paul, tell them about the Humble Bundle and some DC Comics.
All right. Stuff. So normally I don't get to plug Humble Bundle stuff because the timetable is too short. But this Humble Bundle that just came out today has 13 days and 17 hours left on it as of the recording of this. We're recording on the 27th of June. It is a DC Comics graphic audiobook bundle. And you can pay as little as a dollar. If you pay a dollar, you'll get Green Lantern Heroes Quest, Wayne of Gotham, Batman the Stone King, Green Lantern Sleepers Book 1, and Countdown. That's five books for a dollar.
Is that the final Countdown?
No, it's not the final Countdown. If you pay $8 or more, you get DC Universe Last Sons, The Flash Stop Motion, Wonder Woman Mythos, It's Superman, Green Lantern Sleepers Book 2, JLA Exterminators, Infinite Crisis 1 of 2 and 2 of 2. And then if you pay $15 or more, you get, on top of all of that other stuff, DC Universe Trail of Time, Batman Deadwhite, Batman Inferno, Enemies and Allies, Superman the Neverending Battle, Green Lantern Sleepers Book 3, Final Crisis, 52 1 of 2 and 52 2 of 2. I am a big fan of Humble Bundle. I'll be honest with you. Sometimes you get some chafe with good stuff in Humble Bundle, but it's an amazing way to get stuff on the cheap. You can, some portion of it can be given to charity generally. That's not always true. In this case, it is. One of the charities is the Comic Book Defense Fund, and the other one is Hero Initiative. You can choose how you allocate the funds that you pay for this. When you plug it in, you can strongly weight the charities, or you can strongly weight DC, or you can strongly weight Humble Bundle if you want to, you know, set them up. But basically, they all share the revenue from it, and you have some say in the percentages of that. Super cheap to try it out. They're audiobooks, so you can listen to them on your drive or commute. I mean, listen to this show first, but then check this shit out too. I am definitely going to at least throw a dollar at this and see what these graphic audiobooks from DC are like, if they're quality, if there's something I really dig. I'm excited about this though, because it's like this, and they do stuff like this fairly often. There's been some RPG PDF bundles that have been done before. There's been some eBooks. There's been audiobooks done in the past. There's all kinds of stuff Humble Bundle's done. They also do gaming bundles, and some of those have been great too. I always talk about how I have over 300 titles on Steam. A good portion of those came from Humble Bundles, where I paid a dollar or two and got like five or six games. So,
all right, I might have to throw $10 this. Infinite Crisis, both parts are on. Mm-hmm. On this, in the second level.
And the best part about it, so not only do you get access to this stuff, but it's DRM free, so you can direct download, and it's multi-format. So basically, you buy this, you own it, as long as you have a place to store it. You know what I mean? As opposed to some other subscription services and stuff like that, they might take it away in the future. You might have to you don't have to do any of that stuff with Humble Bundle. It's always DRM free. So I've never run, unless it's an online-only game. You know what I mean? That's a little bit different, but.
$440 worth of digital audiobook.
Well, yep. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. It's 22 titles for $15.
Yep.
And if you're not sure if a graphic novel in audio form is going to be something you're looking, you know, that you'll enjoy, they let you sample, you know, some of it to see if you dig it or not. Mm-hmm. But I'm looking into it, and like some of these books are 7-hour reads.
Like, yeah.
That's incredible.
That's a lot of content.
Incredible amount of content for just $15.
Yep.
Yeah.
So I wanted to plug that because it's fresh. It's out there and you can check it out and go nuts on it.
Trying to see what the average runtime was on one of these, but I can't quite see.
Well, while you're doing that,
$15, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, it's a no-lose situation, right?
Exactly.
Especially because it's DRM-free. If you fucking hate it, you can give it to a friend. You know what I mean? You load somebody's flash drive up or whatever. That's technically not maybe within the confines of what they're trying to tell you to do, but you can share it. You know what I mean? You own it. It's DRM-free. You know, once you have it, you have it. And Humble Bundle's platform I can't stress enough, is really solid. I can go back in and grab old games that I've bought in the past at any time. Like, I can go through my whole library, and you want to make sure you log in and you set up an account, you know, obviously, and you want to use that account going forward, because they really do have everything I've ever bought. You know what I mean? I can go back in and grab that stuff. And a lot of that stuff came with, like, games that came with Steam codes. I redeemed them on Steam, and I play them through Steam, but I can go grab the DRM versions, DRM-free ones, if I want. You know what I mean?
Right. So
you can direct download and just, you know, it's, I've spent a lot of money on Humble Bundle over the years, but gotten infinite amount more value out of it than I've ever spent. That being said, moving on, there's a couple of lawsuit related news in the gaming community. One that's making the rounds right now. Oh my God, this is so fucking funny. Bethesda is suing Warner Brothers over their new Westworld app game. Okay. The grounds for this lawsuit is because this Westworld game, they're accusing it of being a direct rip of Fallout Shelter, right?
Right.
The grounds for this is because this new Westworld game has a shitload of the exact same bugs that Fallout Shelter had at launch. Yeah. So they're basically accusing them of directly ripping code.
Stealing code?
Yes.
Here's the funny thing. I saw you post this. I scrolled through. Ellie.
Yeah, friend of the show, Ellie Collins.
She rarely agrees with you. Usually y'all are on opposite sides of things, and I think she likes to do that for fun. She absolutely agreed with you, and she even pointed out the same company who made the Westworld game made Fallout Shelter.
Yeah.
So they broke their contract basically by using their own code from that game. This thing. Like, wow. We said it last week. In this day and age, you're going to get caught. You're going to get caught instantly.
Yeah.
These companies pay people just to beta test other games, just to scroll Reddit, just to look at things to find that stuff. And I love your comment, dude. Bethesda identifying theft by their bugs in the game is very Bethesda-esque.
Oh, yeah. That's such a meme. It's such a meme.
Wait, they launch games with bugs in them?
So I just thought that was a funny little thing. We'll see what comes of it. I'm sure they'll probably settle out of court. I can't imagine that. I mean, that's indefensible.
Yeah.
When you can point to, well, you ripped the code directly and you have devs that worked on both games, that's going to be how big do you need this check to be?
Thank God. Bethesda needs one of these paydays,
they're always struggling. So,
being an indie developer is hard.
It's really tough. In other news, we reported a few weeks ago about a PUBG company suing. Yep. Epic Games over Fortnite. They've apparently dropped their suit. I don't have a lot of details on this one. I only saw it in passing. I just think it's noteworthy that they dropped it.
Oh, I had all the details.
Yeah, okay, go on. Yeah.
It was a stupid lawsuit.
Well, the only details that matter, right?
Yeah.
I don't think anybody didn't see this coming at some point. But I thought it was really funny. Yeah, so that ship has sailed. We're backing off on that. But Phil, you wanted to talk about something kind of interesting.
Oh, well, no, I mean, it's not that interesting. It's just some early reviews have come out for the Ant-Man and the Wasp film that comes out, you know, in a couple weeks. And they're higher than I actually anticipated them to be. And I don't know if that's because the last Marvel movie we had, half of the cast got destroyed, so we needed something to bring us a little bit of joy in this world, or if it's an actual good movie. But the Ant-Man and the Wasp is currently sitting at a 90%, and it seems like critics find it charming. Is this going to sway me to go see it? I don't know. Are we doing a panel on it?
Are you going to go see it?
Are we going to do a panel on it?
I think we should, just to make
you... I think we'll probably do a panel on it.
Well, then I'm going to go see this movie now because the reviews are so good, not because I'm contractually obligated to do it for this show. I will say, you know, I've been very vocally against spending even matinee $5 money on this movie. But the last trailer that I saw, that, well, that's cool. I mean, you don't understand a lot of things. That's the charm about you. The last trailer, though, with Ghost, she really, you know, kicked my ass in gear to the point where it was like, she's pretty fucking badass, and I kind of want to get more.
I'm more excited to see what comes of this. I mean, you've got Ghost is a compelling villain to have involved. Evangeline Lilly as Wasp is going to be interesting. We're also going to get Michelle Pfeiffer as the original Wasp. So that's going to be interesting. You know what I mean? I honestly, I'm stoked. I think this is going to be great.
All right, you kind of took a little of my excitement down with Michelle Pfeiffer.
Why?
She's not doing well.
She's all right. I don't hate her. I've never been like, yeah, Michelle Pfeiffer, me.
But Lawrence Fishburne is goddamn Goliath. I mean, that's awesome. Yeah, kind of yeah. Cowboy that's Curtis is fucking Goliath. Oh man, it's so cool. So yeah, I am a little bit more, you know, excited to see it than I was when the original trailers came out, and things are big and things are small. So we'll see. We'll see.
You know, to piggyback off that a little bit, we just had the new Predator trailer.
I saw the first one in the theater. I'm like,
Well, the first one looked a little bit rough because it looked like a real chop job. You know, it looked like the movie was going to be awful.
I'll be honest. I was kind of blinded by the audio of it. I can't do the impression, but the Predator clicking sound. As soon as I heard that, I didn't really watch it. I was like, Predator. That's it.
Well, so this second trailer that just came out shows a bit more, and it seems like it's probably going to be a little, I think it's going to be a little bit better than it initially seemed. A lot of people are saying, though, like, it's Shane Black. So, in Shane Black trust, I guess, is one of the big things, because he wrote and directed this. We'll see how it pans out. I'm excited for it in case it's bad. I love the Predator franchise, so I want it to be good.
Yeah. Even the bad movie, I enjoyed just because he killed all the stupid people.
And the main human dude in it is the guy who was in Narcos and also in Logan, the main villain from Logan. I can't remember the character's name.
You mean Hugh Jackman as evil Wolverine?
No.
I've never seen a Predator movie, so.
Really?
Yeah.
Color me shocked.
Phil. I mean, well, I know that I have to cover myself in mud so he can't see me, but
that's man, Phil, like I so want to just sit down and watch the first Predator with you.
Well, maybe one day you can.
You don't have to ever watch any of the others. It's fine if you don't.
Why don't you bring your VHS copy down to Dragon Con this year and we can have a little watch party?
Yeah, where are we gonna stick that in?
I got a DVD. Copy. I
only want to watch it on VHS. God damn it!
He wants to see those lines, the tracking lines. Yeah. But yeah, so I was just going to tack that onto the tail end of the Ant-Man and the Wasp thing because my opinion is changed a little bit on that.
Cool. I loved the first Aliens versus Predator. With the concept of the temple and how they grew the aliens.
It has, okay, so real talk, it has flaws.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt.
And it's a Paul Anderson movie, so, you know, it has flaws. But it's a pretty cool crossover movie. The second one is fucking garbage. AVP Requiem is one of the worst movies ever made ever. Just it. Yeah. I was meeting somebody recently.
I've seen White Chicks.
I was in the
three ball films. So
yeah.
Oh.
I'm a member of the LV426 subreddit on Reddit. It's the Alien fan base one, and so it's technically for Alien, but it's also covers Predator. So basically, we always end up talking about both in that sub. But we were riffing on how bad AVP Requiem was, and this dude was like, "Yeah, you can't see anything," and like he's talking about how the light balance is so dark, you can't see any of the action. And I was like, "Oh, dude, really? Like, I thought it was just a shitty theater that I saw it in, like, you know, when I saw it in the theater back in the day. And he's like, no, you can't try watching it now. You can't see anything. And I was like, oh my God. But, you know, it's, yeah, it's the first one has flaws, but it's a, you know, come on, dude, it's fun. When you do a crossover like that, you can't expect it to be the best of either franchise, you know?
I don't know.
But the original Predator, the Danny Glover Predator.
Danny Glover Predator has its moments, but it is pretty rough.
I remember, well, it's when you watch it too. And I remember being in my teens and it's like a free HBO weekend or something back when you had to tune in to shit or you missed it. Mm-hmm. I did not miss those days.
I didn't know HBO was that old.
Yeah, man. 85. Don't pull some 1960 bullshit.
Fucking
out,
1963.
Mario.
Like, it's
just Mario.
For a while.
God damn it. I hate you. So bad. Anyway, I saw it and I liked it. I remember it being cool. That's all.
July 6th, go see Ant-Man and the Wasp and get ready for our panel discussion on it.
Yeah, it's a big Marvel film. We're gonna do a panel on it.
Yep.
And I think if nothing else, we need to talk about it because it is the first official female billing on a Marvel film. Ant-Man and the Wasp. I know Captain Marvel's coming, but it hasn't come out yet. This is the first one, so technically,
hoorah, women! No, I'm totally kidding.
Wow, direct your email.
Sorry,
direct those emails.
Paul Klotz currently appearing as Charles McFall.
Wow.
No.
I will point out I have moderated Awesome Women in Podcasting 2 years running. I created that panel. Paul Klotz hated women. Just so you know.
I do. So
that's how.
Contrary to what you might read on the internet, I do not hate women.
I mean, you keep saying that doesn't college. Make it true.
No, it's cool. Obviously, we're going to get Captain Marvel here very shortly. So that will be the big, hopefully, Wonder Woman-esque slam dunk for girl power in the MCU. But this is a good step there. You know what I mean? I mean, we've had great female characters. I mean, Shuri out of Black Panther and Infinity War is a huge breakout. And I know a lot of people are a big fan of her. I'm hoping to see her role get amped up a lot going forward as well. So.
Yeah, she was the breakout hit to me in that movie. I'd seen her, of course, until somebody said something, I didn't connect the dots. So I saw her in Black Mirror and thought that was one of the best episodes of Black Mirror I'd ever seen. And then, yeah, her as the younger sister just nailed it. It's like, no, I don't want Black Panther 2 right now. I want Shuri. I want that film. You know, just let's see her do some cool stuff, right? Don't start. I want to see her do some cool stuff, Phil.
That I didn't say anything, Charles.
All I heard was fuck Black Panther. Your hood was firmly pulled down around your face.
You know,
and
between the two of you, I don't know if I want to do this show anymore.
We didn't say anything bad about Italian plumbers, so you're fine.
Nobody's keeping you.
Okay. See ya.
So, Paul, what are you reading, watching, playing?
Last night I went to see Hereditary.
What's that one?
That's a horror movie that's got a lot of buzz right now.
Yeah, I hear it's supposed to be wonderful.
Wonderful is a weird word to describe. It is, I'll give my short review here. It is a really well-crafted film, in my opinion. The acting is phenomenal. The shots are incredible, like very artistic. It has slow pacing. I'll be honest about that. The first half of the movie is a real slow buildup. For most of this movie, it isn't your jump scare type horror movie. You know what I mean? It's not like the Annabelle series or anything like that, where it's just jump scare and everything. This is a film that deals with real life topics, such as the loss of family members and like the grief and everything and how it can affect your mental state. It does have a supernatural twist near the end of it.
Supernatural twist.
But it's It's pretty intense. It's a bit rough too. Like, not everybody has been digging how intense some of the scenes are and some of the themes and whatnot. But it's a slow burn. It builds up. And in the end, fucking all, like, all restrictions are gone by the end of it. Like, it just gets fucking crazy at the end and does shit that you could not have expected earlier in the film. And now, by saying that, I probably, like, you know, if you go see this, you'll be like, oh, well, now I'm waiting for crazy shit to happen. But honestly, like, you just can't anticipate some of the shit that's going to happen.
I like to hear that, because that's how, like, classic horror was. You know, your horror from the 60s and the 70s, your first one and a half acts is a slow pacing burn.
It's definitely
insanity. So I love to hear that horror has now made that switch back to, you know, suspenseful story building. So, but I also see that the audience did not like it as much as the critics did. So,
well, that's the thing. So younger audiences, I don't think, are going to get it.
Sure.
Because the main character is a mother, okay? So the basic gist of the... I'm only going to give the intro here. The intro is the main character, Annie, which is Toni Collette. Her mother just passed away. She has two children. She has a teenage son who is, like, late high school, so, like, probably 16, 17, 18. And then a younger daughter who's 13. If you watch the trailer, you know, it's obvious who she is. Her daughter's a little weird, and then she has her husband, and they're dealing with the aftermath of her mother. She had a strange relationship with her mother over the years, but her mother's now gone. It deals with grown up concepts. And I think, like, if you're a teenager or in your early 20s, a lot of that's just not going to feel real to you yet. 'Cause you're not in a mindset where you're contemplating what it's like to maybe lose family members, like your parents,
sure,
maybe, you know, have, you know, children and how it impacts them. You know, it's very much focuses on the mental state and the emotions and the feelings of an adult. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so
no, I get it.
It's a very adult thing. You know what I mean? So I think that a lot of people, like, they hear the praise from critics and people like myself who are like, yeah, I think it was great. And they're like, oh, well, it's going to be fucking nonstop jump scares and stuff, and that's not what it is at all. And it is slow, dude. Like, it is very slow in that first half, but I dug it. Like, I have a lot more patience for it than most people, I think.
I think I'll enjoy it, because I actually love the original Amityville Horror, and that's how that first Amityville Horror movie was, where the whole first act and half of act two was just building to these people moving into a weird house and things are just not how they are. So
yep,
I'm excited. I can't wait to not watch it when it comes to streaming.
Yeah. But it got a lot of critical review. It is doing pretty well from what I understand. Everybody's performances are great, though. Toni Collette is great. Gabriel Byrne plays the husband. His Irish accent slips through a few times, but it's not a big deal. Toni's, like, her British accent never shows up, as far as I could tell. Like, I didn't catch it once. The son, the kid who plays the son, is the same kid who played the nerdy kid in Jumanji, the recent one, if you remember that. And yes, you would think that he's just an up-and-comer who probably doesn't have his chops yet, but he was incredible in this as well. It's a mind fuck, man. I'm going to be honest with you. It's a bit of a mind fuck. And you're going to walk out of it being like, huh, okay, that's the thing. You know what I mean? It's not a feel-good movie, I'll tell you that much. But it's pretty wild. It does some stuff that a lot of horror flicks would be afraid to do as well.
Do you think it's the best horror film to come out since Get Out? On writing alone, or you know, as a film?
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely. Okay. Like,
did you see The Quiet Place?
I did. I saw that in theaters.
So how did the two rank next?
They're very different experiences.
Sure.
So The Quiet Place, I don't consider The Quiet Place to be straight horror. I consider it to be suspense. It's a suspense film. You know what I mean?
I consider Get Out to be psychological horror.
And that's fair too. Yeah.
Sure.
So this film has a lot of suspense. It has a lot of the psychological in it, but it does have a supernatural element to it towards the end that you know, kind of basically takes it in a separate direction. Because Get Out is a real thing with a slightly goofy, you know, story piece in it that allows things to happen. The Quiet Place, you know, has these weird creatures, you know, not entirely real life, but pretty real life for the most of it. But yeah, no, it's honestly, I don't want, like, I think all three of them are good examples of how horror can and will do better now. Yeah. And that the jump scare craze and the regurgitate, I don't want to say that because the Annabelle series, they're not bad movies. They're actually done really well. You know what I mean? For what they are, but they're popcorn fare. This is a more cerebral movie. This is a movie that's going to fuck you up. You know what I mean? If you allow yourself to become invested in the family and in the characters, and you allow yourself to be assimilated into that world, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I gotcha. What about you, Phil? What you reading, watching, playing, man?
So because Cloak and Dagger has, you know, started, and we're going into week 4.
Oh yeah, I got a bone to pick with you on that.
Carry sure. On. Okay. No. I started rereading the original introduction and run of Cloak and Dagger, and it's led me down a weird path where I have now started to read the original run of Spider-Man, because they show up in a run of Spider-Man from like the 60s or 70s or 80s, somewhere around there. And I was enjoying it so much that I just said, you know what, I'm going to go back to the original run of Spider-Man and just power my way through that. So I've been reading that mostly on my Marvel Unlimited app.
Nice.
And then this week we went to see The Incredibles 2. And it was everything I wanted it to be.
Good.
And my
good, right?
Yes.
Some people root for a film to fail. I just don't want to be horrible.
And I mean, this movie's been out for, I think, 2 weeks now. So it's been talked about on every other show, but they pretty much open up the movie with every cast member and the people that worked on it saying, yeah, I know it took 15 years. We're sorry. Enjoy your movie, which was kind of funny. But no, I loved it. And Suzanne, who I was very, you know, if I liked it or if I disliked it, that's fine. I was more hoping that Suzanne, since this is her favorite Pixar IP, that she would actually enjoy it, and she loved every fucking second of it. So it's interesting. We saw it on a Monday morning at 11:45.
Perfect time.
Yep, with a smattering of parents and children, since it is the summer now. And it was fun watching it with a bunch of screaming kids. And there's a shit ton of parent jokes in there that all the parents laughed at, and then the kids, you know, they went over their heads. But I think they did a very good job, and I think 15 years was too long. But, I mean, it paid off in the end, and I can't wait to see the next one in 15 more years.
It's hard to believe it's been 15 years.
Right. They're doing a lot of promotion for it at Disney World, of course, and there's a lot of cool photo opportunities and meet the characters that you weren't getting before, and a lot of cool little things there. My two youngest, their grandfather took them to see it, and I haven't gotten to see it yet, but it looks interesting.
I think as a parent, like, I connected with it more because there's a lot of scenes of the father figure trying to juggle his own life, but also three kids at the same time, and just constantly being tired. And the baby keeps getting out of the goddamn crib, which I am dealing with this week. to the point where I had to buy a camera and lock his door because we shipped Danny off to school. We went to see the movie, and just to watch that scene of him struggle keeping the baby in the crib, just it was just like, no, this is too real. This is too real. Yeah. What's he doing? I need to copy that and try it at my own house. So, Cloak and Dagger is all on my television that I'm watching.
So you were like, Cloak and Dagger, so good. I'm like, all right, Phil, I'm going to check it out, man. Even though I know it's teeny drama, I know it's on
Get Lit Fam channel, whatever the hell it is.
That's you nailed it.
I have no idea, man, at all what channel this is. Freeform.
Get Lit Fam. Now, please do the you know, the Fortnite dance for us as you give the rest of your review.
I can't. I don't know.
Connecting with the youth. That's what Charles McFall is known for.
I watched the first two episodes. I'm like, what the fuck are you seeing in this? I mean, it's not horrible, but it's not like so good. I don't know, man.
I dig it. I absolutely dig it. And
okay, I mean, it's cool. I'm not picking it up. I'm just curious.
No. So a lot of this show is going to succeed and fail on obviously the two lead characters.
Right. They're putting everything on their shoulders.
And to be honest, you know, they're doing a pretty good job to keep this afloat. Now that we're three episodes in and episode four airs tomorrow night, my wife is already like, I don't know if I'm going to continue this journey with you, because they keep, you know, we're teenagers. We don't know how our powers work. Are we supposed to be friends or enemies? Kind of like rough walking around the fact that they're, you know, the Jekyll and Hyde of the Marvel universe. I don't know. I'm enjoying the shit out of it, and I could just be completely biased because I love their dynamic in the comics, and I might have a little bit of a longer leash than I would with other shows that I don't care about the comic book characters, if that makes sense. Like I'm giving them a little bit more leeway. X-Men Apocalypse, because I like the actual characters that are in the story. But, you know, could my opinion change once the season finally closes? Yeah, most definitely. I hope not, though.
I hope for your sake that it's just everything you want it to be. And it's not bad. By all means, it's a notch above CW. I mean,
it's a little bit. Yeah. I've never watched a CW, but I mean,
it's a notch above CW.
It's a little bit grittier than I would believe a CW show is, considering that, you know, episode two, Dagger almost gets, spoiler alert, raped in a goddamn alleyway.
And then about kills the dude.
And then stabs him in the chest with one of her light daggers. So
it was so well acted. I was very uncomfortable watching that scene.
Yeah. And I think that's the thing that's keeping it afloat for me is the acting ability of these two semi-unknown kids that have a lot of pressure on them, because this whole thing could collapse if they don't do a good job. And at the moment they are. Now, you know, they changed a lot of the background story and they flip-flopped the social structure of Cloak and Dagger. But I don't have any issues with that. I like that it's...
It works better in this day and age.
It does. And I like that it is set in, you know, post-Katrina New Orleans versus New York City.
Right.
Because the New York City from the 70s and 80s is not the New York City that it is today. You know, they have completely gotten rid of... Not gotten rid of, but they've cut down on the murder rate in New York, and it's a lot cleaner. So,
yeah, that's fair. I'm gonna try to give it a few more episodes. It's in the middle of my list. It's definitely not bad. I guess I was expecting, well, Altered Carbon. You know, like when I hear Paul talk about Altered Carbon, all right, I'll go check it out. And then, oh my god, so I heard you talked about it. It's like, I was just curious, like, huh? I mean, again, it's not bad. It's a little slow for my taste, but. What isn't these days? That seems to be the trend in TV shows, is let's just take 20 episodes to do what we can do in one episode. Well,
you're completely right. And, you know, we talked about The Runaways and how hot I was,
never five, took off.
Five ever, you know, I got five episodes and I was still, you know, gung-ho about everything. And then it fell off the map for me because there was zero progression on those last five episodes. And I didn't, you know, at the end of the day, I didn't really enjoy that the parents had, remorse and feelings that, you know, we got to save these kids, which was a complete 180 from their comic book characters. So,
yeah,
we'll see.
Yeah.
Time will tell.
We'll see. As you know, I'm into old gaming. Retro gaming is cool because it's like 20 years old. I'm not into retro gaming. I'm into old games that have had their time. And, but XCOM 2, I bought that. Well, Paul hooked me up with a great sale back at Christmas, bought it on my Xbox, beat the crap out of it, loved it. I think I beat it twice. Ended up giving my Xbox One to my son so he could play his Fortnite. And I have the PlayStation 4, which I got at Christmas. It just came up on the free games this month. So mm-hmm. I'm ecstatically going right. And it looks, I don't know what it is. Maybe it's more power. I've never looked under the hood of a PlayStation. I don't know. But things look better on PlayStation 4 than they do on Xbox One. They just do. I love the controller of Xbox better, but whatever. It's good. I've taken a break for a couple months from it, so it's almost like playing it new again. It's very fun. And I've been watching Luke Cage with my wife. And my wife did not watch any of the first season. It's one of those deals where I jumped in with MCU Cast was still on the network. And they actually came here to my studio because I happened to be in Atlanta at the time when Luke Cage was dropping. So we binge-watched 3 or 4 episodes together, recorded the episodes here in the studio, sent them on their way, and then I was just on a roll. My wife never really saw it. So I love Netflix now with how they do recaps from the season. You can skip the recap if you want, but it gives you everything you need to know to go into the second season. I got to tell you, we got to episode 3, and I won't spoil it for anybody, but they're diving in with dealing with issues, man. And they are dealing with an anger issue. And that scene hit super close to home for me. Like the early years of my marriage. It was like, my wife and I were watching. I wasn't uncomfortable. I was like, no, yeah, that was exact. That's how when I tell the story of what happened with me and my wife, that's exactly how I picture it, the way they did this whole scene here. It's just, it was bad. The show is slowly ramping up. Music, not as good as the first season. I'm enjoying it.
I hate when that happens to me, yeah. As me and the wife are watching, you know, a show on Netflix, and she's like, "Oh, look, they're see, we're not so unique. They're dealing with the same problems that we are, dear." I remember the night we found out that me and Suzanne were pregnant, we watched the Masters of None, mm-hmm. and the first episode of Masters of None season one is about possibly Aziz Ansari getting his one night stand pregnant. And like the whole night we just sat there and we were just like, I don't think we, this is too real right now. Can we just go to separate rooms and cry and figure out what we're going to do with our lives? Great. Yeah. All right, cool. We'll meet back up in 24 hours. So
yeah
awkward times.
Yeah.
Brought to you by me.
And I love because they at first, I thought they were veering with Luke Cage. I thought it was veering from the Marvel comic book. We deal with superhero stuff with some touches on reality, you know, the being the role model for the kids. And there's a balance that they find. I thought they were veering from that balance to become very political and into an area that would ruin the show for me. And they didn't, because as soon as it came out of one character's mouth, the other character had a rebuttal to it and brought a reality to it that the other character wouldn't see. And I don't want to ruin it for anybody. I want you to get to it. But I thought they handled – I feel like right now they're clearing the air, rebalancing the show with characters to say, okay, this is what characters would be like in the real world. They would have real-world issues. There's still super issues going on, of course, and superpower stuff going on. But Luke Cage has got to deal with some shit before he can deal with some shit, you know? And I'm very excited about where it's going. I'm not binge watching it because I do have my wife watching it with me. So we get one episode a night. It's my limit, apparently. But,
I left it on all of last night while I slept. So.
And you absorbed it? You got all of it in now?
No. I know a little bit of what's going on with it. Like, I woke up at one point and Misty and Colleen were together, and I was like, oh,
dude, fuck yeah. They are so teasing
Daughters of the Dragon
with those two.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because we're definitely going to do it with Danny Rand because he sucks.
Yeah. But I was in and out of consciousness all night, and so at different points I would I'd catch a few minutes and I was like, all right, I like where this is going. So I need to sit down and just watch it though, because I intended to do that and I passed out, and then it was just the whole thing where I just didn't turn it off because I had watched a horror movie last night. So
And that's another duo.
Having so something on in the background.
The two duos in the first episode, the first couple of episodes is Night Nurse and Luke Cage working out the relationship shit. And then Colleen Wing and Misty Knight. And because as we know, if you watch The Defenders, which was well beyond spoilers, so Misty loses her arm, which I told my wife about ahead of time. I was like, oh, I was hoping she'd lose her arm in the first season, and she didn't, and I'm looking forward to it. And then they took
Wow, you're such a sadistic motherfucker.
You know where she goes with that, asshole. No, I know. You know, that's what I'm saying. Stark Industries, come on, man. I want to see Robot Misty.
No, and losing limbs is never fun for anybody.
Oh, it is it's a good thing, Phil.
No.
You better get used to it. I'm a patron.
No.
I'm a patron.
No.
And so she lost her arm, right? And she is dealing with that. She's dealing with – I need to go a little over the top with some of the responses to her. But Colleen Wing is so good. It is so good. I'm glad she's a part of this series right now.
Colleen Wing is best girl, best Marvel girl.
All right.
I might be biased, though.
Yeah, just a little. But it's okay. She's good. That might be a no. We come off judgmental and bad and chauvinist. But I was gonna say we could line up the female characters in the Netflix universe.
Oh hell no, we're never doing that.
Nope,
can't do that. Villains and heroes we can rank. We're gonna be doing that at Dragon Con, but not the women's. Anyway, before we tell you where we're gonna be on the web, I am gonna be in person at Atlanta Comic Con coming up July 13th to 15th. Be doing the How to Build a Badass Playhouse with Bobby Blackwolf and Roberto
Blake.
Thank you. I always think Rob when I'm looking up his email, and that then it just fills it in. But yeah, Roberto Blake, all three of us are locals, so we tag teamed, and it's a panel I've done before. It's about monetizing your content in the ever shifting online world, and we're gonna be doing that twice. And as of tonight, I don't know if I can say publicly. I'm not going to because I don't know. I can't say publicly who I'm moderating for, but I'm actually being brought in as a moderator for the con, and I'll be moderating a number of panels with the celebrities that they have attending doing Q&As. So that is going to be a lot of fun. So if you're in Atlanta, July 13th through 15th, come check us out. Tony P. Henderson and the Geek Versus crew will be doing a show there. Ellie Collins and Earth Station One, Mike Faber, I think will be doing a panel there. So it's going to be some interesting things going on. And, of course, you can find everything about me, charlesmcfall.com and facebook.com/rockoutpodcasting. Phil, where can we find you?
Follow me over at Instagram on Avery Island One, where I post, you know, normally Nintendo memes and my son doing dumb shit.
I think I follow you on Instagram.
I don't think you do.
Well, I'm going to now.
Only my friends do.
Well, or you can definitely follow- don't.
No, you don't. And then follow me on Twitter at Imaginary Nomad. I am Imaginary Nomad on most social media sites, video game sites. I don't tweet much, but when I do, it is powerful.
Kotz, what about you?
You find me on Twitter at SoapboxGSTU. I never check it. I've said that a lot, so you know. You're aware.
Okay. I totally follow you on Instagram, asshole. Yeah, no, he doesn't check Twitter. Do not try to reach him through Twitter.
You can hit me up through the Facebook page for the show at Breaking the Panel on Facebook. And you can catch me on Thursdays on FTH Beyond, where I pretty much make sure that none of us will ever be invited to go to Fox Next Studios to see them develop the game because I hold their feet to the fire. Catch me over there if you play that game.
You do indeed hold their feet to the fire. And that's, you know, sometimes people need that. It is a necessary evil. All right. We'll be back next week. You can direct all your angry emails to btp@giantsizeteamups.com. Attention, Paul Klotz.
Yay, women! No, just in case you had to be reminded what you're upset about.
Oh, all right. And to our good friend Chris Wisdom, keep shoveling that sand, man. Somebody's got to do it.
Breaking the Panel is the flagship podcast on the Giant Size Team Up Network. You can support the show at patreon.com/breakingthepanel, and you'll find more of our amazing podcasts at giantsizeteamup.com.